Hey, I'm John.
And I'm Becky.
And this is the We Are For Good podcast.
Nonprofits are faced with more challenges to accomplish their missions and the growing pressure to do more, raise more, and be more for the causes that improve our world.
We're here to learn with you from some of the best in the industry, bringing the most innovative ideas, inspirational stories, all to create an impact uprising.
So welcome to the good community. We're nonprofit professionals, philanthropists, world changers, and rabid fans who are striving to bring a little more goodness into the world.
So let's get started. Becky, are you so pumped right now?
You know I'm smiling. We're talking about women today. We're talking about women's health. Yeah, we're going to throw in some board and all kinds of other stuff in there. But at the core, we're talking about women. So I'm excited.
We are. And we're talking about a topic that impacts all of us. And I mean, I want to start with this humbling stat that's not going to surprise anybody because of just the reality of cancer in our world today. But every 90 seconds, someone's diagnosed with breast cancer. And 1 in 8 women born in the U.S. today are going to develop breast cancer at some point during their lives. You know, we've had conversations about how cancer diagnosis in a family can completely change the trajectory of our life. And we've talked to someone like Nancy Brinker, who it did change how she poured into her work. And I feel like we've got another person in our midst today that is a titan just like that. We are talking to Heather Salazar. She's the CEO of Pink Ribbon Good. And I mean, she is really connecting the dots because as we all know somebody affected by cancer, what do we really need? I mean, we have the medical piece, but we also need the creature comforts, but just help with everyday tasks. And that's where Pink Ribbon Good really comes in. And so Heather's story, I'm not going to spoil it today, friends, because I want her to take us through that. But their North Star is to make sure that no one travels this road alone. And what started in Ohio now has locations in St. Louis and San Francisco Bay. And under their Heather's leadership, she's going to go take this national in the next few years. And we are just here to talk all things with Heather. It is a delight to have you in our house, my friend. Welcome to the We Are For Good podcast.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here and just listening to the podcast you've had before. It's just exciting to be even offered the opportunity.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's a huge honor to us. And so it's not going to be a surprise that we want to start getting to know Heather at the beginning of today's show. So I wonder if you would take us back to growing up and some of the formative experiences and take us into your story too that led to this founding.
Well, so if you asked to start when I grew up, I was super passionate about inner city. And so when I was 14 or 15, I was able to start a reading program for inner city kids. And I loved those kids like they were my own. I would go into their neighborhoods and the goal was to keep them reading in the summer so they could be successful at school. So the running joke is when I talk at places, I always say I thought I was going to solve generational poverty. Like I really believed I could do it. And, you know, breast cancer wasn't in my realm of things at all. I got married super young. I didn't plan on getting married till I was 30. I had these big dreams, right? I was going to live in New York City. I worked at the Bowery when I was an intern in Soho. And I was like, I had so many things to do at 30 years old, directly on the dot. I was going to get married and start having kids. Like I knew it, like it was planned out.
Solid plan. As type A, I can totally identify with this. Yes. Exactly. No judgment. I mean,
right. It is like, I had things to do. Hilarious. But right before I was leaving for college in the summer, I was still in high school. I was going dancing at a teen club where you were allowed to go if you were under 18. And I had to go eat tacos before I left because you couldn't afford the food actually in the club, you know?
You're so right, people.
And so, totally. So my now husband was going through the drive-thru at Taco Bell and picked me up at Taco Bell.
Oh my gosh. These are the stories. This is why you asked this question because we need know this. Okay. This happens.
So he went into the military. I chased him. We got married at 19. We've been married 30 years. How crazy. We ended up having a baby pretty young. I got married at 19 and we had our first one right before I was turning to, like at the end of my 21st year. And I was mad about it at first. I was like, what? I'm in school 20 credit hours. How did this happen? You know, whatever. And I just always wanted a lot of kids. And I say that because as you find out later in my story, I had breast cancer at 31. So how crazy, you know, how things work out. So we came home from the military. He got all of his schooling and training and we came home to raise our kids near my family. And we had been home a few years, had 3 small children. And my mom's neighbor is a midwife who had delivered this baby. And she was looking for a home for this 8-month-old, perfectly healthy baby girl. And her mom was dying of stage 4 breast cancer. She was 23 years old at the time. She was raised in foster care. She rode home from her bilateral mastectomy on the bus with a bus token and drains hanging out. So I thought about it. I called some people struggling with infertility. You know, we had three small kids. I mean, our youngest was 15 months. I could not sleep. And so finally, after 3 days, I couldn't sleep. And my husband's like, what the heck is wrong with you? You're up all night, whatever. And I'm like, I can't stop thinking about this young mom. She's like in and out of her car, Steve. She doesn't have groceries and she has a baby and she's sick. And I was like, can we just meet her? You know, just for groceries, just for groceries. We'll just help her out for groceries. So she gets off the bus and I'm assuming it's her. She has a black mini skirt on, this cute black shirt and this neon pink wig. And she's walking with authority. And I'm like, oh, she's going to want to give me a hug. I can't wait to give her a hug. I've been talking to her for 2 weeks. You guys, she walked directly past me like I wasn't even there and walked straight up to my husband and looked him straight in the face. And she said, I need help with my baby. I'm sick and I want her to have a better life than I had. And that was it. His heart melted in a puddle. We went in, we bought her some groceries. We got an attorney. 5 weeks later, we had full legal custody of Lexi. She moved in with us and we spent the next year taking care of her mom, taking her to treatment. Mind you, I'm not Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. So I'm schlepping four kids in the chemo room. Then we drop her off. Then we go to the park. Then we come back and pick her up. She was so happy, you guys, because she had gone to treatment alone the whole time. The adversity someone faces that's underinsured is something like I had never seen before. Yeah. And so for the next year, we just took her to treatment and she passed away a little bit after she turned 24. And you guys, even in the work I do and the stuff we deal with, it's still the hardest thing I've ever seen in my life. She gave me the biggest gift ever, both in Lexi and the fact that right before she died, like she was like in the last 3 days, the last few words she said to me were like, make sure young people do self-breast exams, Heather. They can die of breast cancer. And I did my first ever self-breast exam and she was 18 months, had been passed away. And I found a lump and I wasn't worried because I thought I was invincible. And I thought there is no way that I'm going to have a baby, adopt another baby, watch this person die and have breast cancer. Like I wasn't worried. And I found this hard lump. I mean, it was ultrasound biopsy. 3 days later, I was diagnosed with the exact same kind of aggressive breast cancer as Lexi's mom. I was so angry. So angry. I was scared. I was terrified. My kids just watched this. They were going to watch me die. Lexi was going to lose two moms to breast cancer before she went to kindergarten. And so for the next few weeks, I went to every single doctor you could imagine. I went to treatment at Ohio State, which is about 45 minutes from where I live, but they were doing a clinical trial for this drug called Herceptin that wasn't available yet, that for early stage cancers. You know, I met this amazing person in treatment and her name was Stephanie Spielman and I didn't know who she was. Her husband was in the NFL, big Ohio State guy, stopped and was on Oprah when Stephanie got breast cancer to raise money for this kind of aggressive breast cancer. At this point, Stephanie's stage four because she didn't get this drug that like we all needed called Herceptin. So we become these fast friends. Our kids sit there and watch TV while we get poisoned, we say. We become on the same treatment schedule, right? Well, I get done with treatment and she's on treatment forever, but we still meet at least quarterly, 3 to 4 times a year, bring the kids to play, and we're always in touch. So about 5 years after I was diagnosed, she started getting a lot worse. And her husband was inducted into the Hall of Fame on Ohio State. And she walked out there, mind you, she's supermodel, right? Like supermodel. And she's out there, her head's this big from brain metastasis. She's on a wheelchair to prove to you that breast cancer isn't pretty, whatever. And we would always talk about how when we both got better, she would do research and I would write a program for the care side of things. So I saw her the next week for the last time and she was in her house and she was only coherent for about 60 seconds. And she said, held my hand and she said, don't use my death as an excuse. You know your purpose. And I cried the entire way home from Columbus, like had to pull over and cried. And I wrote a grant begrudgingly because I was like, checking it off my list. I have to do this to honor Stephanie. I'm going to write this grant. We're never going to get it. We have no money, no proven success. And you don't get grants in foundations unless you have proven success and sustainability. We had $2,000 in a pipe dream, basically. And so I just didn't think another thing of it. And then I'm speaking at a university about young women doing self-breast exams. And I get back to the car. I have a BlackBerry. It's 2012. I remember this because it wasn't the super easiest to text. Oh, those days. I have 31 text messages from the Ellen DeGeneres show, from that they announced on the Ellen DeGeneres show that Pink Ribbon PRG received the grant for $45,000. That it was a billionaire out of Texas. I thought it was spam. His website looked so bad.
Even billionaires need good marketing. We get it.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I'm fulfilling my promise to Steph. And it was for $45,000. And in it, there was a little tiny mustard seed. And it literally said, I believe in pipe dreams. Like, he was a total businessman. He had a foundation because he needed to put money from oil, right? Like, he didn't have, it wasn't the normal foundation. Like, prove this. I mean, it was a paragraph this long. When you think about the grants I have to write, we write today, it was a paragraph this big. So anyways, I was like, oh my gosh, now what are we going to do? I sort of just pulled a $100,000 budget out of the air. And now we have to find somebody to make the meals. So we wrote the program for 3 meals a week for your entire family. House cleaning, rides to treatment, and peer support. And we said that we would succinct them. If you were early stage cancer, we would do 2 to 3 months of treatment. If you were late stage cancer, we would do 6 to 9 months worth of these services. And you could tailor the service to yourself. So that's how we started.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out what a transition would be to actually get into this conversation, because that is such a wild story, Heather. I mean, that's wild. And I think one of the things that does not shock me any longer in our work is how often these stories of nudges and just unbelievable things sync up. You can call it divine. You can call it cosmic. You can call it coincidence. But there are so many stories like this in nonprofit where an opportunity is presented and the shocking is presented in front of us. The impossible is presented in front of us. And there are those individuals who somehow can take that moment, like you, Heather. You take it in. And you're like, no, I'm going to take this moment that was passed to me and I'm going to make something out of it. And when I take a step back and I see what you have done, I mean, Pink Ribbon Good is such a dynamic and massive organization that is spun from this woman getting off of a bus at 23 years old with pipes coming out of her and a newborn. And to me, it's a collective of women and families stepping forward saying no more and saying we've got a wrap community in this. And so what an incredible story. Lucky all of us that you step forward and seize that moment. I can tell you this is a very personal conversation because I have a very dear friend about to go through her last chemo for breast cancer next week. Love you, Amy. Aww. And so I just want to talk about how does one with 4 small children who is going through breast cancer treatment begin to build an organization? What did you learn about building a board, maintaining a team, and just getting that initial bench of support behind you? I'd love to start there.
Great. So first of all, I do want to go back to Alexis really quick. So Lexi's mom was named Alexis. And I do think about one thing you said earlier, like think about how hard it is when you have support, life, baby, cancer, everything. And I just want to give credit to her. Like, I don't know. I mean, think about this. Like, she walked into a courtroom with no support and said, I need to find a home for my baby so she wanted what was best for her, even though I don't know if I would have wanted to do that as a mom. I would have wanted to believe I could get better, or I wouldn't have wanted to believe, you know, all of this. And she put all of that aside for this baby, who, by the way, has just turned 22. Oh, anyways.
Hi, Lexi. And so,
yeah, she's pretty much in California playing soccer. She didn't get that from me. So what I want to say is, it didn't start right after I was done with treatment. I was mad. So if you look at it, I'm going to be in March this year. I'll be 19 years cancer-free. How crazy is that? I'm going to be 50. I never thought I would live to see 50. PRG is, you know, 11 years old. So it's not like I was like, boom, let's go. It was with Stephanie's death is when I felt so incredibly convicted. And I didn't think about building a team, if I'm being brutally honest. I go, babe, I think I'm going to start this, and I don't want you to have any high hopes, to my husband. I'm going to work 10 hours a week. I can't be working a lot because what if I die? What if I die? I got things to do. I'm going to work 10 hours a week and I'm going to know every single mom and their kids that we serve. That's my whole goal. That was my whole goal. So after 4 months and we had 400 meals that we were delivering in Costco bags and they were thawing out before we got to the people's houses, I called my husband and I was like, I think I'm going to have to quit. The meals are spoiling. I don't know. Then it was just like, I took a pause. He sent me these, surprised me with these strawberries that I love from New York City. And they came to our house, which he's not like that. He doesn't do that a lot. He's awesome, but he doesn't like send things. And literally I was like, oh my God, they are frozen and they came from New York City. We have to ship the meals. So we paused for 2 weeks on meals. Then we started shipping vegetarian meals because you can ship vegetarian meals without a license. Then we got the license for the meat and then we just started shipping. So we're calling UPS and I'm negotiating all these prices and the meals are exploding in people's houses because we don't have the proper whatever. I mean, we know nothing, right? The other thing is driving patients. So I wanted every single person to know the person that was driving them. So they would live 40 miles away and go to the research hospital. And how do you get them there? And I met with a couple of other bigger nonprofits that weren't in my realm. And they're like, you're never going to be able to do this. Like, you can't. It doesn't make sense. Big. And I just looked at them and I said, Lexi's mom rode home on a bus, so I'm not quitting on this. And there was like no Uber. Like we were literally like spending hundreds of dollars to drive people places. From the beginning, the biggest thing that happened is after I got the $45,000, I went to a local philanthropist who I did not know, and she is my hero. I met her in the coffee shop. I begged five people because I knew she had a lot of money and she lived in my town. And she met me there and she's 80 and her name was Pat Robinson. And I pitch it to her and then I look at her and I say, I need $45,000. And she's like, oh, she's like 4'11". Kid you not, 4'11". Heather, typically when I don't know a foundation and they haven't done anything, I start them out around 5,000 and then we grow from there. And I said, Pat, I don't know eight other people that I have to ask $5,000 for, and people are dying of cancer, and I just need you to give me the money, and I promise you I will not let you down. And she was like, I feel like you're not going to let me say no. And I'm like, I promise you I will be good on it. And she's like, my grandma now, I see her all the time. She's 91. And she said, okay. She goes, but you have to promise me two things. And I said, okay. You will go stomp in everybody's office in Dayton who is running a huge organization, and they are going to be too qualified to be on your board, and you're going to beg them because you're going to need them for where you're going. And you need to surround yourself by doers, donors, and door openers. So I left and she gave me the $45,000 and that's how we started.
Okay. Pat, I need like a t-shirt and a mug for of Pat's sayings. Like this is so good.
Indeed.
Okay. I want to transition because your founding story, obviously you are just starting with what you have and you want to do it all. But you now have transitioned. I mean, you're taking this nonprofit national. You had to get organized. I feel like Pat is in this mode of coach that you need people around this. Walk us through, how did you start to build and, you know, activate? We talk about activating our rabid fans. We talk about building believers instead of donors. How did you functionally do that? And what were the next steps?
So I just went to every place. So I knew that the COO of Children's was a breast cancer survivor, and I knew she cared a lot about the community, and her secretary didn't necessarily give me a meeting. So I just showed up and waited outside. And I was like, I told all of these really busy people, my budget's $100,000. You guys, this is going to take you four. This is their running joke now because we grew so fast. This is going to take you 4 hours a year. We just need to have four meetings. Your names are going to help me. I'm barely going to work 10 hours a week. I just want to be able to help these people right here.
This is the great lie of nonprofit founders always tell themselves. 100%. We get it.
Like, oh, 100%. She said, yes, I'll do it. Then I went to the CEO of all the YMCAs, same thing. So, and the other greatest thing that Pat told me, which was surround yourself with the people that are absolutely strongest, non-yes people in your weakness. So for me, guess what that was? Reading a P&L. What even was a P&L?
Right.
I mean, seriously. And accounting for all of that, I had to take a class. I would like, if you give me, let me speak in front of 10,000 people, I'm not nervous. Make me walk into Panera to meet with my small finance team, I would literally feel like I was going to throw up.
We're the same. Absolutely.
Same. So those people helped me. And we grew fast, Like, so we started with those few meals that I was telling you about. I don't even know the number of meals we served in 2012. In 2013, we served 10,250 meals, and we were only in Dayton and Cincinnati. You know, last year we served 190,000 meals, you know, and so we had to figure it out. But because I had that five, we had a board of like 10, but we had five or six really strong business people. And they helped us with the strategy of growth when we started going into the new area, serving more people, working with the hospitals, you know, all of those things. I mean, now we have like a real business plan, a matrix for growth, what we need. We have data, where you come from. You know, I do want to highlight another story, if you don't care, in this transition that also involves Lexi. So, and it's a very big part of PRG, of who we are today. So fast forward to Lexi's a sophomore. And like I mentioned to you, she has all these Division I soccer coaches asking about her. And mind you, I know nothing about Division I sports. I'm very competitive, but I'm not athletic. We live in Dayton. She would drive an hour and 15 minutes to play on the ECNL team. All my other kids, I barely let them drive on the highway. By the time they were 16, we had to practice. When she hit 16, I'm like, go, Cincinnati. Like, I am so tired of driving to Cincinnati. She laughs about it. Plus, she drove like a grandma. But anyways, so we fly to Phoenix for this ECNL tournament. And I had never seen anything like it. We get there, 75 coaches along the sidelines. And I'm like, if you leave Dayton to fly to Phoenix for soccer, you're clearly in a cult. I mean, I was like,
you're in.
I'm failing in every area of my life, right? PRG is about to hit the $1 million mark. We basically have maybe three employees. I mean, that's stretching it with some people that aren't paid. I feel like I'm not doing well there. The boxes are still exploding. We're doing all of these things. And mind you, at this point, we're in Columbus, but Columbus was a different challenge because it was a research hospital. So we had so many more stage 4 patients, which made our budget higher, all of these things. And I said, Lex, I have 345 emails in my inbox and Steve is with my other daughter somewhere else. And I say, Lex, give me 45 minutes. Just give me 45 minutes. And I have to go at the Phoenix airport over 3 terminals. And I tell you this because how crazy it is. I couldn't find a place to plug in my Mac. So I go sit there. I'm like, give me 45 minutes. I'm going to try to get through as many of the easiest emails I can. 5 minutes later, of course, she comes over. Mom, can I have $5 for Starbucks? And I was like, sure. Hand her my card. This guy sitting beside me goes, did you adopt her? I was like, clearly. And then he goes, tell me your story. And I was like, oh my God, I have all these emails. So I tell him as fast as I can. And he goes, you're never going to believe this. I'm the VC for the guy that started Amazon that sold the software called Jung Lee to Jeff Bezos so Amazon could sell more than books. We're working on AI for breast cancer now. We're going to want to work with you.
This is one of the nudges I'm talking about. This is the cosmicness of the universe.
So I walk back over and I tell this to my dad. My parents are with me. My dad goes, this is single-handedly going to change PRG. I go, Dad, I'm never going to hear from that guy again. So this is May of 2017, okay? So August of 2017, I don't hear anything. It's 10 p.m. on a Sunday night. My phone rings. It says, Neil, Phoenix Airport, because that's what I put him in my phone as. So Steve, I have it on speaker, and my husband's like listening. He's like, I have Rakesh on the phone. You know, the guy I was telling you about, the founder of Jung Lee, I have Rakesh on the phone. We're going to need you to fly to St. Louis tomorrow. We'll get a car for you. I mean, I live in a cornfield, basically, sort of. And he's like, we'll get a car from you. We'll take you to the Cincinnati airport. And we're going to need to talk to you at WashU. So Steve's like, did you look him up? I get off the phone, decide I was rattled. I call back and say, I'll go. 5 in the morning, right? We get in the biggest fight probably we've gotten in years, Steve and I. I'm like, I can't do this. Columbus isn't doing well. I'm not cut out for this. This is way da 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 da. And he goes, Heather, get on the freaking plane. This is what God's called you to do. Get on the plane. Brave people, like, show up scared. So I sit in the back of that car the whole hour to Cincinnati, like, what in the heck I'm doing? And somehow when I just got there, I was like, might as well go for it. I have no idea who these people really are. So we sat down and I said to him again, hadn't looked into him that much. And I said, listen, let's just know where we're at. I'm here so that you don't look like you're a really rich guy trying to become more rich, that you have a heart. So I'm letting you know, I'll come out and I'll tell you all the things of a breast cancer survivor and I'll be your biggest advocate, but you have to open your Rolodex for me so that we can grow PRG nationally. He goes, okay.
I mean, this is the difference between somebody who has a job and somebody who has a passion, because you are not going to take no for an answer. You are going to fight for that mission. And this entire story, as it's just has so many incredible and unbelievable tenets and winding paths to it, but it was literally like the little nonprofit that could, like, it just kept going and people kept showing up. And I think the thing that I love so much about it, Heather, is it could have been a Dayton, Ohio breast cancer organization. And I got to tie it back to something that happened to John and I about 10 years ago. We were working in healthcare philanthropy because I want you to talk about what you've done to increase awareness and how you've expanded this. And we did a lot of fundraising for our Cancer Institute. But when we went and sat down with them and said, what do you need? Like, what's not basic? What do people not know about in terms of the cancer treatment? And they said, the nutrition is so important and there's no energy to be able to cook efficiently for this. Can you help us with meals? And so we created a little program called CanServe. I would love to take credit, but we didn't come up with it. We just funded it. But it was partnering with a local VOTEC that had a culinary arts group. They got together with local growers and sourced all of this clean food, and they made three meals a day for cancer patients. And so everybody that came through, thousands of them,
amazing.
Got, I don't even remember how many weeks it was. But anyway, the point is we had no idea about nutrition. We had no idea about the various needs. And I think what you're saying here is you're taking that awareness to a much broader group, and I felt truly changed by it. Mm-hmm. So I want you to talk about how you flex this platform, and now you have this brand, and mm-hmm. what have you learned about the awareness and the understanding of the situation and circumstances of clients, you know, to ensure that your business is really aligned with what mm-hmm. clients need? And how did you put that on steroids now that you had a national platform to do so?
Yeah, good questions. All of the above. So basically all the issues that I told you we had with the meals, the benefit that the Bay gives you, right, is a lot of innovative things. And so someone at the Bay, it's always one degree of separation, introduced us to a meal service plan out there. And that was our first time. Originally, when we grew to St. Louis, we hired a chef just like Ohio and then had them flash freeze the meals, then worked with a logistics company. It just wasn't scalable for what we were doing. But I'm loyal to a fault. So I do have to tell you, not working with that chef almost did me in. Like when I had to talk to him about growth and figuring out that we had to go with the meal service program, I cried like someone died, honestly, because that guy had been there for me and figured things out, you know, but he didn't have the capability to figure out how to ship foods across state line and be able to give us the price point that we needed. So since then, in full entrepreneurship, we started with one company. COVID happened. The meal service plans you would have thought would have gone crazy, which they did, but some of them couldn't sustain. So then that one wasn't doing good. So they increased our price so ridiculously that we would have been able to serve like 250,000 less meals. So then we went to this other company who I thought would be forever in business. And then they got bought out by Nestle and stopped their B2C program. Give me 2 weeks notice. Mind you, I'm sending 15,000 meals a month. Gave us 2 weeks notice at Christmas, where no one works. We were able to land, and this is just January of this year, with Fresh and Lean, and they're privately held. They are based out of California, but they care. The thing I wouldn't give up on, you guys, is healthy meals. Like, I wasn't going to give them crap. And you could have found solutions for non-healthy meals, but I was like, if I'm not going to eat it when I have cancer, why would I want them to eat it? And that's a hard place to be. So Fresh and Lean, now we have all these things that I don't know the words to, right? Like API, and our back end matches their back end, and you know, there all you these go. Things are so over my pay grade. And they can choose their own meals. And if it's someone that's not tech savvy, then we can tell that their grandma isn't tech savvy. And then we can call them and they can choose their own meals through us. Crazy, crazy. We know what kind of insurance they have, so we can write those specific grants. We know how many rides they've taken. What then? Rakesh's daughter, Ela, was 15 when I met her. And by the time I left their house, she called me, her and Rakesh called me and told me she was going to quit high school to come intern with me in Ohio a little while and bring PRG to the Bay, help bring PRG to the Bay. And so then when she was in college, after all of this, she helped worked with Uber to help create a code so that you could have a code that would only go for our rides. All of this is helping us scale. Like, this is so out of my league. This is so out of all of our leagues. Same with the community. Like, this is like, I was talking to my husband last night about this interview. Like, if you are in the Bay, or if you're in St. Louis, or if you're in Dayton, you're like, oh, if you meet this PRG family with this PRG family, they know it's them. Like, we have all these pink trucks and they'll say, we provided 10,000 meals. It's them. It's so much bigger than me. It's so much bigger than all of us. We are one family. And in that, they make the difference. And when I'm at an event and they're like, oh my gosh, is your person complaining about, because we have like 60 pink trucks now. So they're bright pink and they have our logo all over them. They're like, does your driver complain? And they're like, oh no, we provided 1200 meals with our truck. It's like
it'd be a point of pride for me. Yeah.
So those are the things of like, I don't, you know, when I listen to the, like even the podcast on Airbnb and how they started, well, if I would have known all the issues, I wouldn't have done it. Like, that's how I feel, right? Like, if I would have known all these things, same with everything you did. So a lot of it's a growing curve. I mean, I would sit out there in California with some of those meetings with founders of companies that like Open Table and weird things that you use, WhatsApp app or WhatsApp or whatever. And I would WhatsApp. I got it. And I would go to the bathroom.
Yes.
Yeah. Love them. They were friends. But I would go to the bathroom and I would call my husband. I need to come home. I shouldn't be here. I can't even, like, the first time they were like, so what is your business plan? And I was like, I don't know, to make sure 300 people get their meals next week. Like, that was my plan. So you really had to grow. And I had to really be willing to grow, get the education. I mean, I took a class on reading a P&L. So I knew my finances forward and backwards. Mm-hmm. I took a class on how to present, you know, a real business plan. But, you know, Sarah Blakely is my hero. And I won't trade like the passion of who I am. I don't raise money orthodox. Like, I come in and they're like, well, I planned on 5. And I'm like, well, I need 50. Like, I'm not normal in that aspect, but I did have to become better, become more polished, become a better leader. You know, sometimes I still pull in here and there's all these cars and I have nowhere to park. And I'm like, oh Lord, I really hope all these people aren't counting on me to hold it together. You know what I mean? Like, it's still so surreal so many times.
Heather Salazar, I love the human that you are. I love just your open arms just for people in your life and the way that you have led this organization in that way too, because it's so much more beautiful because of how you've let people in without, outside of your capabilities, outside of what maybe were your, you know, innate knowings, you have grown so much. So I'm curious, like, looking back now, what would you go back and tell young Heather on this journey? What would you say now, like maybe what not to sweat, or what would you kind of encourage her?
Mm-hmm. So the first time, this is still hard for me. I don't know. The first time that I had like an employee issue, like, I think everyone's my friend. How could you not like me? I like you. How could you not like me?
I suffer from this as well.
Oh, I let things go too long. And it's so weird because I'm a straight shooter, no shocker. But I'll like come in and if I'm mad, I'll be like, I'm mad. We've got to figure this out. Da, 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 da. Then I'm over it. And people don't get over it, or they don't move on. And the first time that like I had to hire people that were like so much smarter than me in certain aspects, my board literally sat me down and they said, you're going to lose 50% of your employees. This is big. You're going to this, you're expecting more things, you're more professional. And I was like, these people are lifers. No way. And guess what? Yeah, I lost 50% of my employees. I mean, and I was like, so hurt. And now I'm just like, wow, they're on to doing great things. We're on to doing great things. Like, if I could somehow not take that personally and also encourage them, but I'm still not great at that.
There is no clean journey in this and founding a nonprofit. And I just commend so much for what you've done. And I want you to give some counsel to individuals out there who are going through Evolve Partnerships, because we've been talking about this for 2 years. And I want people to embrace and feel the boldness of Heather Salazar when they walk into an organization and they want to pitch to them and say, this is why I think there is value in our partnership for you and for me. I want you to talk about how you've done this, what counsel you would give them, because you have corporate partnerships across the country, people who are pouring into the mission of Pink Ribbon Good. Talk to us about what you've learned about collaborations and what counsel you would give to other nonprofits who are really trying to make those bold partnership asks.
So I think the biggest thing is to always, always be willing to take feedback. So like, I think when you're able to say, how did I do? If you didn't know me, would you still agree with what I'm saying? Like, you know, meaning like, was my pitch strong enough? If I'm in Silicon Valley and not right here with my good buddy, Ernst Concrete, one of my first pink trucks, you know, what would you do? And they'll say, you talked too fast. Or Tom Robinson always used to say, I had to turn my hearing aid down, Heather, but I barely ever tell you no. You have to be willing to take that. And sometimes being self-aware, I do think as I've led more people, as our team gets bigger, as I'm starting to create a leadership team, the easiest people to coach and grow is if you are self-aware, right?
Yeah.
So I know sometimes for a long time, I could walk in and I could be like, here's my story. You better love it. And you would be it. But the bigger, the more times people have heard 50 million people pitch because, you know, they're doing the WhatsApp. Yeah. You have to be polished. I have to pitch differently in the Bay than I do in Cincinnati. And I had a lot of critical feedback where sometimes I'm like, dang, am I cut out for this? So one, I think it's to be willing to have critical feedback. The second is, I don't know if you guys like Bob Goff, but I love Bob Goff.
His cell phone in the back of his books. It's insane.
I know. So he coaches me some and he's like, ask for what you want. Ask for what you want. Every day, ask for what you want. The other thing that I think is my secret sauce, which probably annoys people sometimes like my husband, is I just never overthink it. In my head, it's going to go good. When it doesn't do good, I'm crushed because I'm like,
love your giddy optimism. Me too. We're ridiculous idealists.
They're going to give me the money. And so I think that my secret sauce is I just always assume it's going to work out. Now, clearly it doesn't always work out. And you know, even in the hardest part of my job, guys, is my whole family, you know, we watch people die. That is not easy. That is not easy. But you know what? Our lives, my entire family's life, and they will tell you this, is so much better with these people. They live in the moment. They don't worry about getting their hair wet. Sometimes they don't have hair. They go down the slide. They think, I don't know if I'm going to see this, so I'm going to show up right now. They're not on their phones. They're not sweating the small stuff. They make us better humans. And the minute I'm not sobbing once a week for someone who's going through something is the minute I'm done because I shouldn't be doing this. So I also think letting people in and truly just learning from them is the best gift I've ever been given. It is such a privilege that these people have changed my life. And you know, I just lost my vice chair and she was a powerhouse over Midmark, which makes all the hospital beds. And her mantra, she spoke at our last event. We moved our event up because we have two board members very sick, which, so we moved our event up to June, which we always have it September 16th. And she spoke and she's like, don't wait. Don't wait to tell people you love them. Don't wait to use the good china. Don't wait to go on vacation. Like, don't wait. And when you can learn from those people and live your life like that, you are living such a great life. And the other thing that Stephanie said is, don't use my death as an excuse, but as in a purpose for everything that you do. So what a legacy you get to live on through these people. The only way you honor us is by loving your family and living big. That's the only way you honor these people. So that's just the way we have to choose to live.
I mean, I love that you brought it back to community. That's our rally cry here. It feels like that's what centers you. It's what started your story. It's what surrounds and uplifts your story today. So we have to ask, and you've given us so many great stories, but I wonder if you would take us to a moment of philanthropy in your life or journey that has stuck with you when you really saw the power of philanthropy. Take us back to that.
It's no joke around here at PRG that the Bay kicks my butt. I'm just telling you, it's hard. It's hard. I don't understand. They have a lot of zeros by their name, but somehow I can't always get them to give money. It's a different world out there. And the need, the disparity gap is so huge. You're either boom or you're boom. And so about a year ago, and you know, after COVID, one thing that we did that was super scary is every day I had a $50,000 event canceling as soon as it started. And I was like, oh my God, Yet 50% of the people we were serving were at the poverty line, and their kids ate 3 meals a day at school, and they stopped going to school in one day. So I took everybody together and I said, if you want a job and you're still on this team and your heart's beating, like, welcome to the fundraising team. We got to figure this out. And then I made a decision that I pretty much was 7 out of 10 sure it would sink us. I said, everybody that's at the poverty line, we are going to give them 5 meals a week instead of 3 because their kids aren't eating and they can't get to the soup kitchen and they can't get to the food lines.
Bold Heather.
So it gave us about 6 weeks until we were out of business. 6 weeks. And I was like, this is my hill to die on. It's the right thing to do. Every other nonprofit I knew shut their door. And I was like, these people don't have food and they have to go to, I needed an army to go with me to chemo, like literally an army. And these people have to go in by themselves in like alien suits, basically with mask head to toe, and they can't feed their kids. So I just thought, okay, this is going to be our hill to die on, but we're going to do it. So anybody's business that wasn't hurting at that time was construction, which luckily I have a lot of construction, whatever. I asked them to double up. And they were like, Heather, we don't know what's going to happen. I go, these people are dying and they can't feed their kids. So we just kept going. And then, as you know, there was PPP and clearly we made it. But that gave me credibility in the Bay. Okay. But one time last year when I was like, I don't know if we're going to get it. My patient coordinator came over and she called me and she goes, Heather, you always say we can make decisions and not have to ask permission, ask for forgiveness. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all about that. Fail fast, fail forward. She said, Remy lives in a rented room and she has stage 4 cancer and she met all the criteria and she wouldn't take our food. And she said, I need a ride. I have surgery tomorrow. I don't have this. I don't have anyone. Her emergency contact was her landlord in a rented room where 10 people were living in a 4-room house. And finally, Diane goes, she wouldn't take our food. And I kept pushing why she wouldn't take our food. And finally she goes, it's okay. I just need a ride. She said, I have no family here and I live in this rented room and I've learned to survive on bread and water because I don't have a refrigerator. And Diane goes, I know we don't have any money, but I sent her a refrigerator from Amazon so she could get our food. And that's when I was like, we're going to figure it out in the Bay.
I just think back to that time in COVID and I just think of the paralysis so many of us felt. And I think that a word I really want nonprofits to embrace, and you have done it culturally and embedded it culturally into your nonprofit, is we've got to get some moxie. We got to get comfortable with taking that risk that our mission deserves and figuring it out. And then socializing and telling the story of what's going to happen if we do and what's going to happen if we don't, and allow people to rise into that moment. And I want to be a part of missions that allow people the dignity to have more than food and water when they're going through stage 4 cancer. And I think the fact that you empowered your team to embrace that says so much to me about the culture you have created of Moxie within Peak Ribbon Good. And so I just feel so grateful that we've had this conversation. You have been dropping bombs the entire time that are full of truth and wisdom. We end with a one good thing, and I wonder, what is yours? Could be a piece of advice, a life hack. What would you leave with our audience?
2 things. I'm going to leave 2. One, I want to tell you that this summer, Lexi volunteered here, which she never has because she plays soccer. And she came in to staff meeting and she said, I got to give 3 people rides today and my mom didn't have a ride.
Full circle, baby.
That was amazing. The second thing is look for a glimmer of hope. During COVID, like what you said, every day we would ring a bell or yell a loud thing for a glimmer of hope to try to see we were going to make it. And the glimmers were small. Like, someone brought us cookies today because we're still working. Those were our glimmers of hope. But just look at our glimmer of hope at a time to get through, and one step leads to another.
The words of this community that surrounded this thing are just flowing through this conversation. Heather, we're just so delighted to be able to get to meet you today and hear this story. Wonder if you'd connect us up. How do you show up online? Where can people find y'all? What do y'all need? And point us to
what do you guys need?
You know, the ways to connect.
Well, just in case Mackenzie Scott's listening, about $10 million. You never know, right?
Mackenzie, all of our listeners need that. Yes.
Yes. Or Sarah Blakely. She's my hero.
We'll get both of them.
You know, we actually, in all truth, you can find us at pinkribbongood.org. You can also find us on all the socials as Pink Ribbon Good. The other thing that I think is so awesome with our growth, if anyone's listening and super passionate about this, we actually do have like a matrix now. And so there are things we know to go into different people's regions as we're trying to go, a hospital partner, an ambassador, you know, advisory board, and we could raise money. And that's how we are going into these new regions. So if anyone's super passionate, like, they can reach out to us. And that's how we got to Buffalo. And that's kind of how we're going to Louisville next. And so that would be awesome too.
You are planting your community. You are growing, you're expanding. And I just think of all the Alexises out there who would have been alone had you not listened to your nudge. And so thank you, brave Heather Salazar, for being such a model of resilience, moxie. We are rooting for you. And thank you on behalf of the Amys in all of our lives who are going through breast cancer and wrapping all of us in community and just basic necessities. You are a hero.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for being here, friends. And you probably hear it in our voices, but we love connecting you with the most innovative people to help you achieve more for your mission than ever before.
We'd love for you to come join our good community. It's free, and you can think of it as the after party to each podcast episode. Sign up today at weareforgood.com/hello.
And one more thing, if you love what you heard today, would you mind leaving us a podcast rating and review? It means the world to us, and your support helps more people find this community. Thanks so much, friends. Can't wait to our next conversation. Rabid fans have always powered the We Are For Good podcast, but now Rabid fans can get even more goodness and access by joining Good Friends. It's our listener support community for the We Are For Good podcast.
Good Friends comes with perks, exclusive episodes with John and I, including The Good Brief, our new monthly cliff notes of the greatest takeaways and lessons learned from that month, and exclusive AMA episodes where we answer your burning questions and tap our community of experts. Join now or learn more at weareforgood.com/friends.
We can't wait to see you inside. That's weareforgood.com/friends.